Hello, and welcome to this episode of Not a Lady, a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is episode 6 and 7 of season 2, titled Where the Heart Is, parts 1 and parts 2.
All right, the beautiful thing about podcasting is that you guys just listened to us finish our discussion of part 1 of Where the Heart Is, and it's probably about 3 weeks later.
This is true.
And we are ready to talk about part 2 of Where the Heart Is, which released on the same day, the 20th of November, 1993. Chuck Bowman directed, and Beth Sullivan wrote. So we had our huge cliffhanger ending. We had our huge cliffhanger ending with Sully walking in the door. And then the opening scene, we have a famished Sully scarfing down food while the Quinn family all look on.
Honestly, I did not feel like, okay, you know the scene in Beauty and the Beast where the Beast is like trying to eat soup and he's like slurping and like it's just like a mess? Yeah. I don't feel like Sully was like super, you know, doesn't have manners or anything. Yeah, it wasn't super proper, but I do think they intended to make him look at like he's a savage or something. And, like, he's eating like I would eat now, like at my normal dining room table, but I guess these people are too posh for that. I don't know.
Well, I think it's just the juxtaposition of just how he looks and...
which is handsome. I just don't understand anything that's wrong with this.
Well, so first what happens is, what's the jerky sister's name again? I already forget her name.
Marjorie.
Marjorie is like, he's what's termed as a mountain man. We don't know what that is. So I was like, you know what? I want to Google actually like what a 1800s like quote unquote mountain man. Because remember we like talked about in the previous episode, Saving Souls, how bounty hunters actually weren't a term or a job used during that era, but it's like something that has come since looking back on the era. However, I found fascinating information on mountain men.
Oh no.
And actually, this is the first time I think that we've ever heard Sully called that. Do you have any other recollection of him ever being called a mountain man?
The only other time is maybe during The Visitor. Maybe her mom says something about that, but I don't actually, I don't remember, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe. Mountain men, they were namely explorers who lived in the wilderness. There was a peak population of mountain men in the 1840s, and they really kind of were established in the Rocky Mountains. But mountain men actually played a huge role in the United States westward expansion because most of them were traders, not only between indigenous population and settlers, but also between different like sections of the mountains. They worked as army scouts. They worked as guides for wagon trains. They were namely fur trappers, especially in the beginning. And I found this one article that actually termed these were America's original survivalists, but actually I think that is actually kind of an offensive label because that's totally negating the fact that they learned most of their survival skills from building relationships with local tribes who have been living off the land long before they were. Yeah. So that was definitely one of those articles that was whitewashed. But it was interesting because then I read about their presence. And when I think about Sully actually fits into this perfectly, I think in my head, often I've looked at Sully as being this oddity in that like where he fits in the world of the West as this bridge was unique to him. But in my reading, I actually found out that Sully's position is actually one that quite a few men had in the 1800s, and they became these experts in trade, and they became experts in native life, some of them going and living with the tribes, you know, others not having as a romantic of a relationship with Native Americans, but instead taking advantage of the Native tribes, especially when they negotiated in the place of settlers or the army. And sometimes history knows that those negotiations were not fair. However, some of them made their home amongst the tribes. There were others, you know, who gained fame from killing in tribes that were considered dangerous or hostile. So the article is titled, actually, let me make sure that I quote it correctly. The article is titled, What It Was Really Like to Be a Mountain Man in the 1800s. And I definitely recommend anyone who has a deep love for Sully, which I know many of our followers do, read it. And I think you'll find it really fascinating to see that, yes, yeah, Sully isn't like this enigma necessarily, but he's actually a part of this like community of guys who took on the role of mountain man. And actually sometimes they would have annual rendezvous where all these mountain men would meet up to like trade and discuss trapping. And
I was gonna say, so it's not necessarily a incorrect label for him necessarily.
No, it's totally not. And that's what's cool is I love in the next moment because Dr. Mike comes in strong and defends Sully.
Yeah.
He's a miner, a carpenter, a hunter, a negotiator, and he saved my life. And it's like, yeah, and all those things are what define a mountain man. And then we have the like, honestly, I loved it so much because it was so cringy. But when she says, he saved my life countless times, and Dr. Burke doesn't miss a beat, for which you have my undying gratitude, sir. And it's like, wah, wah. And I was dying laughing. I was like, oh boy. And everyone's just awkward sitting there.
It is. I also was glad because for a split second when Sully's like eating and everyone's staring at him like he's like an alien, Dr. Mike looks like slightly ashamed. And I'm like, is this... Obviously, I've seen this episode before, but you wonder as like a viewer, like, oh, is this going to be one of those episodes where like Dr. Mike does not do all the things we like about her, which is like stick up for people. And it may have turned into that episode.
Yeah.
But I do like that. Yeah. That she stands up for him.
She does.
But yeah, it is awkward because it's like, okay. And here's that guy. There's that guy was there.
I was watching the first time I was like watching it to prep for this. I think I sent you a Marco Polo and I was like, this is the drama that I am here for.
That we have been waiting for. I know. It must be really hard to be Dr. Mike and have two people in love with you. Can't relate, but it's fine. Yeah. The next scene is actually Dr. Mike and Sully are in his room and she's kind of making sure he has everything he needs. And he's asking her what's wrong. And she explains that, you know, she's surprised that he's here. And she asks him why he's came. And he basically says like, oh, you were gone for a long time and I got worried. And it's kind of weird because they're like very close and his like hands on her shoulder. And like, you can tell she's uncomfortable because she's like, all right, good night. Bye. And then Sully looks really sad, which I was like, that's sad. He came all the way here for this girl to be like weird, not herself.
Yeah, she's a little formal. And I think that formality in Boston is expected, but it feels cold to him.
Right, right. For sure.
But we've all been there where we have this expectation of how we think people are going to react to something we do, and then they don't. Yeah. And then you're like, no, man, I built this up so big in my head that nothing was going to make me excited. It was all going to be a disappointment.
Yeah. I also think everybody's had those moments where, depending on whose company you're in, someone you may like usually be super comfortable with, you feel like you have to like act a certain way because yep. It just feels like weird. So I can understand it.
And that's definitely a direction that this episode is going to lean in.
True.
Did you think it was weird in the next scene that Sully was the last one to be up and come to the breakfast table?
It's one of those things where I was like waiting for them to be like, oh, good morning. Like, oh, finally awake. You know, one of those scenes. And he was going to be like, I've been out chopping wood for 2 hours. Like, yeah. I don't know why. Yeah, it did seem weird because clearly he's an early riser, but I don't, maybe he felt like awkward or I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did seem weird. Especially because then Dr. Mike's like, gotta go. Gonna go hang out with my other boyfriend.
Yeah, that's probably why they did it, because they wanted it to feel like he had just got there and she was already leaving. Dr. Mike has made plans to go out with Dr. Burke, and she leaves him in good hands with the children, talks about how in less than a month, they know Boston as if they were born there, which I just want to point out, like, the next time we see the Cooper kids with Dr. Mike, they're going to say, like, it's been a month. And so we get that thing again where I'm like, I literally have no idea how much time is passing between every scene in this episode. And I think it's a lot, but it feels like, I don't know, just the way that they do the scenes feels like this is that same day, you know, other than they all change outfits a lot, which I guess should be a hint as well. But also we're just like, oh, it's Boston. Everyone has their... day wear and their evening wear and their dinner wear.
That is true. And that's a big point of discussion in this scene, actually, because when Sully comes down, Elizabeth Quinn, Dr. Mike's mom, says, like, oh, we can probably find a way to have my husband's old clothes, like, tailored for you. And Sully's like, no, I'm good. Like, I don't really need it. And Dr. Mike is actually the one who says, it might make it easier. And Sully says, easier for who? And then the scene ends up, I mean, they don't end up finishing that conversation because Dr. Burke comes and everything. But yeah, we'll see that multiple times here.
Well, don't you feel like this is literally the same beat that she did in part one with Matthew?
Yeah.
I don't remember what Matthew says, but something along the lines of like, for who? For Boston? And then she's like, no, for ourselves. I forget. Actually, let me look at what the actual line.
It was before they even got there and everything.
Oh, it's before they go out to dinner, maybe. New clothes for Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then Dr. Mike says, it's where we are. I think it's interesting that they play this as the same beat. And they don't change it, really. I don't have much more to say on that. It's just an observation.
Yeah. Dr. Mike and Dr. Burke go to, where do they actually go? I didn't remember this from the first episode, if they like talked about going here and I forgot, or...
We meet Mrs. Garrity, who's sick.
With the pneumonias.
Yeah, I think it's just, there's a lot of children and they're all in bed, obviously in the middle of the day. So this, I don't know if it's like a sick house or...
That's what I,
We learned the lady, they thought she had tuberculosis, so they kicked her out of the... like the poorhouse.
Why would they do that? Why would they kick someone out with tuberculosis out?
Because apparently they know more than Kid Cole knows when it comes to the contagiousness of tuberculosis. Meanwhile, Kid Cole's going around kissing people on the lips.
I know. So I was studying today with a friend and we were talking about tuberculosis and I still like secretly think that maybe he has latent tuberculosis and he just has some chronic symptoms. He doesn't really have any active symptoms, but anyway, yeah, she probably got kicked out because if she had tuberculosis, obviously that's contagious. She ends up having pneumonia, which Dr. Mike listens with her stethoscope, which I don't know if you know when the doctors or providers listen to your lungs.
For blood. She was listening for blood in the lungs, maybe?
It's very interesting because we're on the anterior part of the chest, the front part of the chest. We listen for heart sounds. There's five different spots. But also that's when your doctor says, take a deep breath in and out. And that is when we listen for lung sounds. And we do that on the front and the back of your chest because there are multiple lobes in your lungs and you could have consolidation in certain areas, which is what we listen to usually if we're suspicious of pneumonia. Obviously, we can hear your symptoms, we can ask you history questions, but when we do the physical exam, you'd be listening. And with pneumonia, it's very common to hear something called ronchi, which is an adventitious breath sound that sounds kind of like snoring is the best way I could describe it, as well as rails or crackles, which are other sounds that would indicate consolidation. And so I think most people know pneumonia is an infection, but it's of the lower respiratory system, mostly in the lungs' alveoli, which are kind of those little air sacs. And sometimes they fill up with fluid or with pus, which cause you to have a cough and a fever and chills and trouble breathing and things like that. Pneumonia, usually, it can be viral, it can be bacterial, so it's often treated with antibiotics for that reason. But it's not something that commonly kills people today unless it's not treated and it can go on to other things in the lung and just the chest cavity in general. It's not necessarily a death sentence today like it could have been back then.
Yeah. What I like about that scene is that Dr. Burke very obviously lets Dr. Mike draw her own conclusions as opposed to going all, I'm the man, let me tell you what it is. So,
yeah.
Which I think is a notable difference from some of our other interactions we've seen between her and male doctors.
there's something to be said for that. And Dr. Mike's mom will say something later that's pretty indicative of that as well.
Ooh, indicative. Good word.
Oh, thank you. I'm smart. You're not the only smart person. I'm just not as great with my words, but I'm trying.
The next scene, Sully and the Cooper kids are out and about in Boston. I appreciate that they have a conversation where Sully is definitely trying to have perspective on the... Honestly, it's like so relatable because I'm living in a foreign country right now. It's about perspective and cultural norms and expectations and point of view. And I think it's a good conversation, but it frustrates Matthew because he feels like he wants Sully to be
on his side.
Yeah. And Sully's not doing that. He's very much playing the devil's advocate, but in a way that shows that he's trying to be sensitive to all sides of the story and all experiences.
I know, it's like super mature.
Yeah, it is. It is, especially keeping in mind the disappointment we know that he must have felt about how Dr. Mike received him. But their first stop is the confectionery, which Brian is very excited to show Sully.
And Sully's like, candy is candy.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think he's trying to say?
Well, I think it's just interesting because, as you said, it's the same scene, but Sully is really defending Dr. Mike, and I'm sure there's a lot of things she wanted to do, and now that her mother's not as sick, he's really like playing into the fact that like it's okay to be here, it's okay to enjoy things, and then there's that kind of switch. I don't know, you're the English teacher. You should probably be telling me how it was supposed to be interpreted, but I think part of me felt like he put on that front to have that conversation because they also say like, oh, well, she just wants to be with Burke and this is all for show and he probably likes Dr. Mike and Dr. Mike probably likes him, Sully says. I think like after he has that whole kind of conversation with them, I think it starts to sink in of like, oh, she likes being here. And because he hasn't been there, right? So he's getting all this intel from the kids and I think he's kind of, all the things he was hoping were not true are now true. And so then I think he has to flip to the other side of like, yeah, it's good to enjoy these things, but also it's not all it's cracked up to be. I don't know. That's kind of how I saw it of like he was really trying and then that kind of realization happened. And then I don't think it was anything personal toward Brian. I don't know. What were you thinking?
I genuinely wanted to know what you thought because I wasn't sure.
Maybe he doesn't like candy. I don't know.
I think I was kind of thinking that because Brian's comment is the confectionery kind of makes Mr. Bray's
look dumb.
Jars look dumb.
Rude.
But then Sully is saying, like, candy's candy. Yes, a whole confectionery looks nice and they, you know, it's got all the jars and it's got the ice cream and it's got everything. But at the end of the day, a piece of candy that Brian loves from Mr. Bray's store might taste just as wonderful as one from a fancy store in Boston. And so going off that idea of just because something looks nicer or seems easier or prettier or more convenient doesn't mean it's better.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the attitude, especially when we look at, I think not Mrs. Quinn, I think they do a good job of showing how sensitive she is because she's visited Colorado Springs, that she talks about the town and talks about the journey in a very understanding way. But for the majority of like Dr. Mike's sisters, they're like, how could you want to be there? Everything here is better. I think it's playing into Sully trying to give a rounded perspective to not say, hey, you don't need to hate on Boston, but also just because it looks nicer or it's more convenient or it's different than what you are used to doesn't necessarily mean it's better.
Right.
That was my interpretation.
I got it. I like that. Dr. Mike and Dr. Burke are then leaving the...
another patient, because they're talking about someone else.
Yeah, they're talking about a lesion on a leg and all that. And they actually end up going into this small office. It looks like a little clinic. Dr. Burke explains that as much as he does not miss Dr. Hansen, and must I say...
Who would?
Neither do we. he, you know, misses having a partner. The right partner. And then they're like looking at each other and then it's like weird and then it's like, what is happening right now? And then the scene ends.
I don't think it's that weird.
No, it is weird. Imagine being her and you're like, I know what you're saying without you saying what you're saying, but also, do I know what you're saying? Because maybe you mean a partner in work and not a partner in life. But also, why are men so cryptic? It's just like...
I think that men say the same thing about women.
Yeah, they probably do. And the answer is, I don't know.
We're back with Sully and the kids, and you can kind of tell that the children are feeling a little bit neglected by Dr. Mike. Not in like a mean or like intentionally hurtful kind of way, but more just in a, well, she hasn't had time to do some of these things that we would be interested to do because she's been spending a lot of time with Dr. Burke. Matthew, I get it, like he never wanted to be there and he'll say that later on. Matthew's just not very mature about this whole thing.
Yeah, I also am like, I would also be kind of annoyed if I had to spend a month, like I already didn't want to go somewhere and then we're there for a month.
But I just feel like he's never having a conversation with her about how he's feeling. He's just...
It's just like, let me complain.
Yeah, it's just whiny and insensitive. And like, you lied to me and you don't need me and... What, you know, you're here and we're not doing anything. Like, it's just...
Isn't that how teenagers are?
It's not sitting down and saying, hey, Dr. Mike, I'm really ready to go home. I came for this reason and I want to get back to... You know, he never says that. He just says, Why are you acting like this? What's wrong with you? You know, and like, Dr. Mike, I thought home was Colorado. Like, you can have a home in more than one place, which, you know, then we get the title of our episode and Sully's like... Home is where the heart is, which I don't know if that's like Sully being cryptic about Dr. Mike needs to decide where her heart is. But Sully's very understanding. They talk very briefly about the Boston Art Museum that would have been built in 1867. It's a beautiful building. I found pictures of it. It has since been demolished. The Boston Art Museum that you will see today is, they moved there in 1909. So unfortunately you can't visit the art museum that was in Dr. Mike's day and age. Similar with the library. The library was established in 1848, but they moved to Copley Square in 1895. The architect for the library termed it as being designed to be the palace of the people, which I think is a cool picture to think about how the kids would kind of see that building and what they would imagine it would be like. However, if you want to go visit the library today, it is also quite changed. A lot of expansions and renovations have been added. And right as they round the corner, they see Dr. Burke and Dr. Mike having this... I mean, it's like normal for the culture of that era, but it seems very intimate, a kiss on the hand as they are parting ways.
And then Sully's like, I'm in no hurry. Because I forget what the question, Matthew asks him, like, when are you going back? I'm going to go back with you. And then after they see that, Sully's like, I'm in no hurry.
He's not going to run away.
And then we have the scene where everyone's saying goodnight and... We still have the kids, Sully and Mike, and you've kind of described some of the stuff that happened in this scene where Matthew's like, why are you talking so formal? It's just Sully. You know, you haven't needed any help from me. I don't even know why I came here.
Yeah.
Dr. Mike's explaining that there's a ball coming up for her mom. They want to stay for that. But she basically is like, well, I'm not giving you a ticket home. And then she does this thing that I don't like where she apologizes to Sully. And I'm like, how come you like say you're sorry, but you don't always say you're sorry to the person you need to say you're sorry to? Which, I mean, I probably do that too as well.
I think Matthew should have apologized too. I think that whole scene, the dialogue is quite clunky.
Mm.
She tells Matthew to like watch his language.
Because he said hell.
Yeah, the dialogue is clunky. I don't think it makes any of the characters very likable.
Yeah.
Neither one of them are being sensitive or listening to the other one, which actually I think you and I had the same conversation about this in the Rite of Passage, which was Matthew versus Dr. Mike. I think probably the last significant one. And I remember feeling the same way about that one. Like, when they're both mad, they don't listen to each other. And it's just not fun because they're both in the wrong.
Yeah.
I also don't like the part where Brian's like, Dr. Mike, let's take Sully to see the ocean tomorrow. Because in the previous scene, Sully had said, oh, he'd like to see the harbor. And Dr. Mike's like, Sully's seen the ocean. And I'm like, dude, just because he's seen the ocean doesn't mean he might not want to see it again.
I thought that was weird.
I don't know why that bothered me so much.
Well, no, it was just weird because then he's like explaining about New York and I'm like, is it supposed to be they're showing that like she knows a lot about him that people don't know. It's a little weird.
Well, because that scene in part one was quite significant. It was a very vulnerable moment between the two of them. And then to use it kind of in this negative way, it just feels really jarring. But maybe that's what it's meant to do. Dr. Mike just can't find a middle ground in a lot of this episode. And what I mean by middle ground is in part one, so much of part one was Dr. Mike trying to explain to her family that she isn't Boston anymore. We've seen in her costume changes, we've seen in her, the way she's like talking, that the longer she's in Boston, the more she's gravitating back to being quote unquote Boston. But now with Sully there, she feels more Boston than she did in part one, which I think is actually quite realistic. I think you and I have talked about this before, like as third culture kids, as kids who spent a part of our developmental years in a culture other than our passport country, I never feel less American than when I'm in America. But then when I go overseas, all of a sudden I feel like some of my American tendencies that I don't realize I have show up because it's the differences between, you know, these things.
That's a good connection to make, I think, because not that I've forgotten about the first part, but I think it seems so separate at this point. But that is interesting how it really shifts with her. Well, I think it's like that age old, how long does it take before you feel like you are, I don't know. I think I can identify it with in similarly in the way, and I'm not able to articulate as well as you are, but.
Well, because Boston's always going to be a part of her, you know?
Yeah, it is.
But
it
so is Colorado.
Right. Right.
Wait, and then she invites Sully to a TED Talk.
Not a TED Talk. It's a professional medical paper presentation. Would you come to that if I invited you?
Would I come to the Boston Medical Society to a speech?
If I was giving a...
I'd come. Well, with, I'd come.
It's different if, like, you're the one giving the presentation.
I probably wouldn't understand.
Hey, at least she invites him. I will say she invites him to a couple things that I'm like, that's nice, instead of excluding him. Like, it shows that she doesn't... It's not that she doesn't want to be around him.
Yeah.
She's not trying to get rid of him. Like, everyone... At least Matthew's presenting. But, of course, they get to the assembly, and everyone treats Sully like he can't hear them.
It's a pretty good scene transition where she says to Sully, "You're most welcome to come." And then they literally flick to the door where Dr. Hansen's like, "He is not welcome here." It was very quick transition. I liked that.
And Dr. Mike is defending him very loudly and strongly, to which he says, "I don't need someone to speak for me, and stop acting like I'm not here." And I love it because he tells Dr. Hansen, like, "Use some of those Boston manners you're so proud of." Mm-hmm. And even Dr. Mike's mother actually says a word or two in Sully's favor and agrees. And so, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Ungentlemanly and incompetent. This is where I was, like, waiting for Dr. Hansen to go, "Well, I never."
Whoa, we just laughed exactly the same. They don't really show too much at the assembly other than Dr. Mike smiles at William and Sully sees it happen.
No, it's literally he just starts a lecture. But a little historical tidbit, the Boston Medical Society actually was called the Boston Society for Medical Improvement, and it was established in 1828. And they met two times a month from 1828 until 1917. I found this part of this journal article written by one of the members of the society, written in 1901. He kind of said there's like been three generations of members. In the second generation, from the beginning to like the third generation in 1901, he was saying that in the time from when they started the medical society to then, they had seen statistics come into play as part of medicine, the microscope be invented as part of medicine,
Robert Hooke,
anesthetic come into play. And actually, At one part, the article said it's been interesting as we have outgrown French ideas, which I only understood because you've talked so much about how a lot of the Western medicine and certain practices were started or researched or first successful in France. So that was really interesting to kind of read this historic article.
I taught you something.
You teach me lots of things.
Back at the house, Elizabeth comes upstairs to bring Sully clothes, and they have a very mutual agreement of, like, neither of them mean disrespect, but Dr. Mike cares. And her mom explains that, like Dr. Mike shouldn't have to defend your appearance. I don't know. I feel like that's a weird... It's not weird. I don't expect her mom to understand that, like, he doesn't feel the need to be anybody but himself, and that includes the way he looks.
I hear what you're saying. I like the idea that making sacrifices for others doesn't have to mean you surrender who you are.
Whoa, deep. I do understand the idea that Dr. Mike, and you have to think back to the last episode, part one, has spent a lot of this episode defending herself, defending her lifestyle, defending Colorado, defending her children's behavior, the way that people look. So she's already spent half this episode defending Sully. She spent most of her life defending herself as a female physician. Like,
yeah.
I do understand that. And I think it's nice for her mom to get involved without, like, saying too much. I think the way it's first introduced, Dr. Mike cares. So I get it, like, the reasoning, but I think the way it's presented is just different.
You kind of want him to make the decision for himself, like he did in Happy Birthday, as opposed to being pressured into it.
Yeah, because it's not like it's this new concept of, like, he's never looked nice before.
Yeah.
And maybe if he had, right, if he's left it on his own devices, maybe it would have never happened where he thought, oh, I should try to look nice, because he hasn't been there. He doesn't know to him, Dr. Mike looks super comfortable and seems to be getting along. So maybe the thought of, like, she still has to go through all those challenges, even in her, you know, her hometown. I'm probably overthinking it per usual, but.
Bro, that's literally why we made this podcast, so we can overthink this show. And I guarantee there are listeners who overthink just as much as us. And that's why we love them.
Yes, we do.
It's a good discussion. I want to talk about this a little bit further into the episode, but one of the issues that I have with this particular storyline is we get a lot of people telling Sully what Dr. Mike does or doesn't think or feel.
Except Dr. Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this episode, if you did like a timestamp recording of how many lines and how much screen time characters get, I think Dr. Mike would actually be on the lower end because we spent a lot of time with the kids and Sully. And I'm not complaining about that, but I'm just saying we're building up to Mrs. Quinn. Well, first of all, she's trying to figure out, she still doesn't believe Sully just came because he was worried, right? So I think mom knows more than she's letting on. The kids are going to be really working to help Sully. Dr. Burke's going to be spending a lot of time talking to Dr. Mike, but we actually get very little time other than the scene towards the end, which is when I'll talk about this more with the mom. We get very little time where Dr. Mike is actually sharing what she thinks or feels. In dialogue, anyway.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
There's moments where we can read what maybe she's thinking or feeling, but actually, I'm talking like scripted voicing of her feelings. It's a lot of other people doing the talking.
Especially compared to the first part.
Yeah, which was all, yeah, it was definitely focused on her and what she was feeling and what she was struggling with and sharing her feelings with Dr. Burke, with her mom, with the kids.
Yep.
You can talk about the ball.
The first thing I wrote, I don't even know if I can say this on the podcast.
What? Oh my.
The first thing I wrote was, is Sully looks hella handsome. He does. And then I wrote, shut up.
I don't like it when he really shaves.
Good. Okay, I hate that I'm like this person. I'm all for the stubble. Is that a word? Stubble?
Yes.
But he looks really good. He looks very handsome, clean shaven. and he brings Dr. Mike a drink before Dr. Burke can do it. He even acknowledges Dr. Burke, actually. They, like, shake hands or whatever.
They're very cordial with each other. Civil. We don't have any of the...
They're not dumb, though.
But they're not...
They know something's up.
They're not competitive in a way that makes me roll my eyes.
Well, they're grown men. You would hope so. I mean, that's not the case with most... Well,
but how many shows have we watched where two guys fighting over a girl... And I don't mean just, like, physical fighting, but, like, verbally. And at the end of the day, it really should be the girl who makes the decision. And I hate when that happens, where we take the agency away from the woman, and we just, like, as viewers, need to watch and see which guy we think is more dedicated to her, or what usually happens in TV shows, which guy we think is more handsome and therefore belongs with her. But one of the things I appreciate about this storyline is if we're gonna do the two guys in love with the same woman, that it's not they're trying to make each other look bad. Instead, it's more about her.
It's true.
And what decision she's going to make.
And we see this maturity even when Elizabeth makes a toast to Dr. Mike and Dr. Burke, saying that she owes this birthday to them. And even Sully, he says the same thing, like, oh, to Mike and William, you know, which, again, seems like not right to be coming out of his mouth. But I think there is a maturity, and I feel like it says a lot more about him as a human being than anything, so.
Yeah. When they point out his outfit change, he quotes back what Mrs. Quinn quoted to him in the bedroom, which is, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Little history tidbit. This dates back to 4th century AD. The Roman Empire was split. Especially in regards to faith, this is when Christianity was really starting to move through the Roman Empire. And St. Ambrose, he said something similar to this. The original quote is not the quote that we actually say. When I go to Rome, I fast on Saturday, but here I do not. Do you also follow the custom of whatever church you attend if you do not want to give or receive a scandal? And so there was this big idea of young churches were practicing different things, and there were a lot of Christians who were feeling torn between what was the right practice. And so St. Ambrose had said this thing of, it's not necessarily about what's right or wrong. It's more about, hey, as a member of the church, are you going to do something that's going to upset people versus just follow the customs, as long as they're not averse to the faith, right? Which this was having to do with,
right,
when is the appropriate day to fast. Anyway, St. Augustine, who a lot of people will know as the father of Western philosophy, theology, and Christianity, he wrote a letter quoting this, and then there were, like, more letters that went out, and over time it actually changed to this, when in Rome do as the Romans do. But I thought it was super interesting that,
yeah, that's not what I was thinking at all.
People quote this all the time, not realizing that it was literally related to confused church customs. They also sing to Mrs. Quinn. They sing, he's a jolly good fellow, but they sing it, she's a jolly good lady. And I learned something about this. A lot of movies use this song because Happy Birthday is copyrighted.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
How can they copyright the Happy Birthday song?
I think maybe the musical arrangement is copyrighted, not necessarily the words. So a lot of movies will use this song. Movies and TV shows will use this song instead of Happy Birthday, which is super interesting. But it was historically, the first time it showed up in the United States was in 1870. But the tune to He's a Jolly Good Fellow is originally from, like, a French folk song. And then there was, like, an American tune, We Won't Go Home Till Morning. And they transferred the music from We Won't Go Home Till Morning, and then in 1870 in New York, it's like when it was, like, first used musically. But the song itself was actually popularized in France because Marie Antoinette's nurses would sing it to her children.
Like, what?
It's weird.
Weird. Wow.
But anyway, it fits.
The only other thing I was going to add about this scene, there's a very long scene during this where it's like Dr. Burke and Dr. Mike are dancing.
Yeah.
and Sully is, like, watching, like, all uncomfortable and everything. Yeah. It's, like, unnecessarily long. Like, I'm like, we get it. He's, like, gaping at them, you know, while they're dancing.
Well, and Mrs. Quinn kind of, I don't know, she doesn't rub it in, but she's like, why aren't you dancing?
She, like, calls him out. Because you probably don't know how. Yeah. But she tries to almost get to the bottom of everything there because she's like, you know, like, explain to me, like, why did you really come?
I think she wants either of them, Sully or Dr. Mike, to admit he's there because they have feelings for each other.
Yeah.
But neither one of them will confess it to her.
Right.
But then what's weird is, so you're not sure if she's for or against them? Up until later when she admits, I don't want you to marry Sully, and it has nothing to do with love or with him being bad guy or anything.
Right.
But it is interesting. She's really putting pressure on both of them because is it the scene right after that they're leaving the party and Dr. Mike's like helping her mom up the stairs? Is that next?
No, it's later after Sully has his transformation.
Okay.
The next scene is during that whole, like, singing to Mrs. Quinn thing, Sully kind of gets pushed to the back. And then the next thing we see is he's packing up.
Oh, yeah. He goes to run away.
Yeah, and then Matthew is like, oh, it's because of William, because they were dancing. And
I literally thought that was the same night, but Matthew says, it's because of what happened last night, isn't it? I'm like, wait a minute. We just lost a whole day?
What did you do for a whole day?
Hang out and then decide to leave?
No, he was like sulking about it or something. And his whole reasoning is like, well, nobody makes Dr. Mike do anything she doesn't want to do. Mm. And Matthew, again, is like, Dr. Burke makes her forget, like, why she came here. Why she came to Colorado in the first place. You have to convince her that you're just not against Boston.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, and it's funny because I'm like, there's nothing Sully's done that's really made it seem like he's against Boston. He freaking wore the clothes. Are you kidding me? Like, what more do you want from him?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Matthew isn't one that should be giving advice at this point, but.
Amen.
Yeah.
Because Matthew's not been very nice to Dr. Mike either. So it seems a little self-interested to be like, you need to convince her that we need to go home because I want to go home.
Literally. No, I think that is where the intent is.
But also, recently on one of the Dr. Quinn Facebook groups, someone wrote that as they got older, their opinion of Dr. Burke changed, that they used to hate him, but as an adult now watching, they actually were like, he's not such a bad guy. And there was very much two sides of this where there were people very against Dr. Burke and there were people who agreed. Yeah, no, he's not a bad guy. One of the comments that I saw of people really against Dr. Burke was based on Matthew's line in this scene, which was that Dr. Burke flatters Dr. Mike about being a doctor. Mm. The literal definition of to flatter is to lavish insincere praise and compliments upon someone, especially to further one's own interest. And I would actually fight with someone who said that Dr. Burke was being insincere.
I agree.
To Dr. Mike about being a doctor. Literally from the moment that we meet Dr. Burke, it's in the scene where they go into the room and Hansen and Burke are in there. Dr. Burke totally listens to what Dr. Mike has to say. He says he agrees that it's a good idea to have her examined. He stops to apologize that Dr. Hansen is sexist. And there was nothing that he gained from being like that to her. A lot of people were just like, no, I don't like Dr. Burke because I want Dr. Mike to be with Sully. And I'm like,
yeah, of course.
We all do, of course. But I really don't agree with this. Oh, yeah, he's just flattering her about being a doctor.
From the outside, I think, like, from Matthew's perspective, it might seem insincere to him. But because we're seeing it actually play out, I agree with you.
I think a more accurate thing that Matthew says is, being in Boston, being with Dr. Burke, she forgets why she went to Colorado. Because everything's a struggle for her in Colorado, from the men to being a doctor to just living out there. Like, you know, in the beginning, she's like, I feel uncomfortable being served. But we see throughout that she's becoming more and more comfortable with being served again. And I think there is something true in that the longer you are somewhere, it's easy to fall into old patterns. And it is a world that she knows very well. And not having to battle to be respected as a doctor, which she will come and face in a bit in Boston, but on the whole, when she's with Dr. Burke, that's not what she's facing.
Yeah.
I 100% think that is a valid reason.
Yeah.
Why Matthew would say, like, she's forgetting why she went to Colorado in the first place. And I think we talked about in part one, I think I said I wish that Matthew had not come on as strong about not wanting to go to Boston in part one.
You did say that.
Because that's what makes this conversation, which I think is meant to be a light bulb moment for Sully, it just seems really self-centered and really dismissive of Dr. Mike's talents as a doctor.
Yeah, I think that's a very good analysis of that conversation. And again, I think that's why we talk about characters as characters, not just as like, we're watching this because we like Dr. Mike and Sully.
Absolutely.
The big thing that happens after this is Sully is convinced that he needs to convince Dr. Mike that he's not against Boston. So the kid's taking shopping and he spends half of his spare home on that. And I'm like, dumb.
Actually, this was a good point because in episode one, I was wondering how Dr. Mike was like paying for all their new clothes and stuff. But they do have Colleen say, oh, don't worry. Grandma gives us money all the time.
Yeah.
She'll probably pay for you to leave. And I was like, okay, that makes more sense why they had all this money to like spend on these new clothes and stuff, because their grandma gave them money. Not because we know that Dr. Mike does not have a lot of money, because we know she
gets paid in chickens and they teach him to dance, which, dude, there's like multiple times in this episode, this is dumb, but where Colleen is a little too close to Sully and I'm like, we cannot have another one of these.
Oh no, you're having heroes flashbacks. I did not even think that.
I don't know what you're reading here in Boston, but we can't redo that, okay? So anyway, they teach him to dance. Even Brian gets a like proper dining setup, and they explain to him the escargot fork and all that.
Do you know what escargot makes me think of? There was It Takes Two.
Yeah.
The Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
I know exactly what scene you're talking about. I love that movie.
Escargot dates back to like the ancient Romans.
You do so much more research than me. I should be like trying to research like medical stuff. I'm like, there's not that much medical stuff in this. Let's just talk about Sully being attractive.
I found this quote. Humanity has been eating snails for longer than dining utensils have been invented.
I know. I believe that.
But interestingly enough, as far as escargot in the 19th century, I don't know if this is a true story or if this is just one of those, it's been passed down to legends. But supposedly, coming to the 18th century, there was a young chef in France, and a minister told the chef that unexpectedly they were having a foreign guest come for dinner and that he needed to prepare a meal. And because it was so last minute, they didn't have any fresh food because, you know, back then they didn't have refrigerators and stuff. So whatever you were preparing, you were going to the market to like buy that day. And he was panicking and he went outside to the garden to see what they had. And he saw a bunch of snails and he decided to prepare them. And the guest, the foreign guest that they were having, was actually Tsar Alexander I of Russia, who's like the great, great uncle of the, you know, the last czar of the Romanov family, you know, Anastasia.
Seems like a weird guinea pig to try that on, but
yeah, no, I know, right? But I think he knew about it, like he had heard, because he was a chef, like he had heard like the ancient Romans cook snails, and so it wasn't like he made it up, but it was that he was like, okay, this is what we have, and that's what they served for dinner. And that is kind of what this article was saying, was kind of the rebirth of escargot in France. Kind of a fun thing. Interesting.
It is interesting. And apparently Dr. Mike loves them, so
yeah, so funny.
After all the lessons that Sully's getting, we go to dinner. Dr. Burke is there. We then have Sully showing up all shaved in a suit.
He's talking so formally. Mrs. Quinn is a very hospitable woman. And I was like, cringe.
Blame it on the kids, honestly. And then he says the when in Rome. Dr. Burke is explaining that he gave all the credit to Dr. Mike on her cure. Dr. Mike's like, no, really, the cure should be to the Cheyenne.
I like that there's a look before that, though. Because I don't think that we as the audience think that Dr. Mike really wanted to take credit. But I think, because it's her mother who says, oh, good, you should get the credit, that you're like, oh, man.
That seems messed up.
This is going to be a fight or something. You know, like, he's going to be like, you're changing, you know, you took credit. But instead, she kind of makes eye contact with Sully and is like, no, it's not me at all. Also, if we look in the course of history, this is a reality, right? Where
white people get the credit.
You know, indigenous peoples, not just indigenous, like North American indigenous peoples, but tribes in Africa, you know, Chinese medicine, like there's all sorts of like ancient cultures that the white man has turned around and taken credit for, you know, like literally tea in England, you know, it's like this thing that's like, oh, it's very British, but like all their tea originally like came from
India and
Asia.
Yeah. Well, and Sully really explains as well that she does deserve credit, though, because she did the research and she has such an important job. He, like, really emphasizes, at this point it gets a little corny because he's, like, really emphasizing the important job she has in Colorado and
to bring Native medicine to the West.
And this kind of goes back to what Matthew was saying. I think he's trying to remind her why she went there in the first place, and that even though she hasn't been there in, I don't know, 6 weeks, I don't know how long it's been, but
yeah. At least a month.
Her important job and all the things that she's doing for people.
Also, it ties well into, if you flash back to one of the first conversations, maybe it's the second conversation that Dr. Burke and Dr. Mike have. And she says to Dr. Burke in part one, the Cheyenne have been studying medicine for just as long, if not longer, than we have. And I think that's where we kind of see this juxtaposition of, yeah, maybe she really is forgetting the longer she stayed there. Because that was one of the first things she said at the beginning was this is not credible because of me or because I've tried it, but because they have studied this medicine and then I've been a witness to it working. This is part of what you're doing out there. Not only does the town just like need a qualified doctor, but you are also being a bridge.
The next scene is what you were describing when Elizabeth is going up the stairs. Dr. Mike is helping her, and she's like, well, Sully has really undergone a transformation. I'm speculating what his motive is.
She wants Dr. Mike to be like, I think he's in love with me. Right. And she's like, no, he just cares. He was just worried.
That voice is funny.
I love Elizabeth Quinn rolling her eyes and being like, yeah, I didn't know that Mr. Sully was so up to date on ancient proverbs. The undertone of that line I read as like, my daughter is an idiot for being so smart.
I wonder if that's how Mom feels about us. What do you think, Mom?
That her daughters are idiots for being so smart? Definitely. In the next scene, Sully asked Dr. Mike on a date for the first time. And she's caught off guard, but she says yes. And we're like, yeah.
She looks like shocked. He's like, supper and dancing. And she's like, who are you? And what did you do with Byron Sully? But she says say yes. And so they go to dinner and they eat our escargot with their little tiny forks. And he looks very handsome. And then they dance. And he's trying. How did he pay for that? Did, like, Elizabeth, like, give him money so he could, like...
I know, right?
Take her out. I'm just saying, for real. These are not, like...
Brian, probably in all his cuteness, was like, Grandma, I want to buy a lot of candy. Could you give me some money? And then he took it to Sully.
I don't think... You know, a lot of candy is going to get you into fancy restaurants with snails, but I could be wrong. I wouldn't know, really.
Listen... They're a rich family, and little Brian has Elizabeth Quinn wrapped around his finger. I have two different feelings on them going to dinner at the same place that Dr. Burke took them. Part of me, I want them to establish that their relationship is not the same and doesn't need to be the same as her relationship with Dr. Burke.
Yeah.
There's, like, part of me that feels that way. Like, why does he need to take her to the same place? But then there's part of me that also, I think this is trying to show that they can enjoy spending time together, whether they're hanging off the side of a cliff trying to expose a miner who's poisoning the water, or at a fancy restaurant. And I'm not sure, it doesn't lean one way or the other strongly enough.
Yep.
It's just a lot of prolonged eye contact, I guess.
Yep.
I think a big part of this episode is realizing they are secure in their relationship no matter what they're doing.
Right.
What do you think?
I think that if you know I like to go to Olive Garden and my ex-boyfriend took me to Olive Garden, it doesn't matter. You should still take me to Olive Garden.
Okay, fair enough.
That's my thought process, but you know, that's just me. But then it's funny because the next scene is like the kids are like, now you have to do something really special. And it's like, okay, what's really special? Maybe the opera. Sure enough, they go to the opera and Dr. Mike is fluent in Italian apparently.
She might not be fluent in Italian. I did have the same thought. Here's the thing. La Traviata.
Which I have seen. I have only been to the opera once, and this is the show I saw.
Where? When did you go to the opera?
You know who took me?
Who?
I was in high school, and remember the Minsks that live across the street?
Mm-hmm.
Had a ticket, had an extra ticket, and invited me. And I remember Mom, like, had this, like, really nice coat. I don't remember what I wore, but I remember Mom gave me, like, this nice, like, fur coat to wear to the opera, and I felt, like, really fancy. And I went to the opera, and we saw this show, and the thing about, obviously, I don't speak Italian. They have a screen that has all the translated into English, you know?
Oh.
Which is why I'm like, oh, it's so funny. Dr. Mike must know the show, or, yeah, speaks Italian. But, yeah, it was just kind of funny, because I've never been to the opera. That was the only time I ever went with them a long time ago. And this was a show I saw.
Huh. Okay, so this show by, I don't know how to say his name, but I think it's like Giuseppe Verdi, is based on La Dame aux Camélias. You might be able to read it better. It's French. By Alexandre Dumas, which most people know Alexandre Dumas as writing The Three Musketeers. It's an Italian opera based on a French novel. I thought maybe that Dr. Mike might have read the book, and that's maybe why she knows what's happening in the opera, or she's seen it before. In part one, we actually showed her seeing the poster for it,
right?
Which I feel like there might have been a cut scene,
yeah,
where she told the kids about it, and that's maybe why they suggest it. But the opera first premiered in March of 1853 in Venice, and it made its way to New York and was performed at the Academy of Music in December of 1856. However, I was reading the summary of the opera because I just wanted to know a little bit more about the story, because all we get is that very short snippet of the main character singing about whether or not she should be with her love or be alone. It's about this guy falls in love with a courtesan and she wants to be with him, but then she's like threatened by, there's a guy who, you know, wants to buy her, and then she gets sick, so she breaks up with him. And then in the end, she dies. And spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen, but that is the entire plot of Moulin Rouge. Have you seen Moulin Rouge?
I have not.
Baz Luhrmann, who wrote and directed Moulin Rouge, I wonder if he saw this opera. So I went and did some research, and he did see a opera, but it was not this one. But critics actually had pointed out that the plot lines, apparently there's quite a few operas about courtesans falling in love with good guys and then getting sick and dying. Knowing that basically they were watching Moulin Rouge. Oh, dude. Not that Dr. Mike's a courtesan, but she definitely feels torn about if it's the right thing to do to be with the guy she loves or to just do maybe the more practical thing, which is what everyone expects her to do, which kind of ties in to this story. But anyway, I recommend you should watch it, Kelly, and then we should talk about it.
Sure. Maybe we should start a podcast about that.
Musicals? Yeah. Let's finish this season first.
Dr. Mike says goodnight, and then Sully's like, wait, and you're like, is he gonna confess his love? No, he's like, let's go on a walk. I'm like, you guys,
I thought he looked like he was gonna kiss her.
Yeah, but also I'm like, what world are we in where Sully asked Dr. Mike if she wants to go for a walk? Like, that's half of their conversations in Colorado Springs are them walking and talking. Anyway, he's trying to be cool and everything.
That's true.
She has a lecture to go to, but she invites him once again. And sure enough, they go to the lecture where Dr. Mike is the only woman. And Dr. Burke gets up to speak, and then he yields the floor to Dr. Mike. And there's this big commotion because how could a woman doctor possibly speak to us about things that are medical?
Hansen's like the first one to walk out.
Yeah, which is like, fine, I don't care. But it's very interesting because she starts explaining how she's living in Colorado and she's learned all these, like, found these new ways of healing people. And she's not a homeopathic doctor because someone accuses her of that. I just briefly wanted to touch on homeopathy because actually in physician assistant school, we have a whole integrative medicine module we have to do, and part of that is homeopathy. And there's a lot of different types of medicine, okay? Homeopathic medicine, it's an alternative medical practice, and the philosophy is based on the theory that like cures like. And what I mean by that is that they propose this idea that the disease can be cured by the induction of immunity. And so they come up with different remedies that are consist of dilutions of certain like natural extracts and things like that. It's very different than Western medicine, allopathic medicine. And their whole idea is that there are simple problems to treat simple illnesses, but they use dilutions and tinctures and all these kind of things. And funny enough, it's actually the preferred practice of the royal family.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We learned that in school. But it's been around since like the 1700s. It's not a new idea. But you notice that the doctor who accuses her of it, it's like they don't want to hear about homeopathy because it's not widely accepted by those that practice allopathic medicine, which is Western medicine.
So like when I lived in China, they would say things like, if you have heart issues, they would say like, oh, you need to eat more heart. Or like, oh, if you have, actually, I think I remember telling you about this, Kelly. They were like, oh, if you have skin conditions, one of the best things that you can eat, according to some of my national friends, was donkey skin. Do you remember talking about that?
Yeah.
For those who don't know, donkeys are Kelly's favorite animal. Yeah. And I sent her this message one time being like, my friend Jane wants me to try donkey skin. And I feel very conflicted about it. It's all about what you put in is directly related to your health. That's one of the reasons why if anyone ever travels to China, when you go to a Chinese restaurant, they will bring out water for you to drink. However, the water in China, they will bring out hot water. And the reason is because the Chinese don't believe in drinking cold water, definitely not ice water. And the reason is because the fluids in your body are not cold. So they believe like drinking cold water actually disrupts your system. You should drink lukewarm or hot water because that is your internal temperature. There are aspects of homeopathy that actually are just like in this episode is all about the Cheyenne medicine, like these teas that are super old. There's these traditions that have been used and have been effective, but maybe not for everything all the time.
I don't think, though, that what Dr. Mike is explaining is homeopathy. It's not.
It's not, but it's the same idea of, like, the perspectives of it is a non-Western.
Right, which is why it's very hard for them.
So I'm just associating it, like, ancient Chinese medicines, I'm associating it with, like, ancient Cheyenne remedies are viewed in the, I think, by these men in the Boston Medical Society. They're kind of viewed through the same lens.
I follow.
Another word that one of the guys shouts out is like quackery. Quackery is literally people who practice medicine without the proper qualifications, which they are throwing that at Dr. Mike because women can't be doctors. So they're like, this is a woman giving her opinion on practices of healing when she doesn't have the qualifications. And that's why homeopathy was historically actually associated with a lot of women healers because women couldn't go to medical school. So often the only sort of healing that they would learn would be some of these not medical school standard practices.
Right, right. It's neat in this scenario because she's able to explain about the willow bark tea and the dandelion root tea and all this research she's done. And people are getting up and leaving.
Yeah.
My favorite part is when Sully, like, holds that guy down.
Yeah.
He's like, sit. It's very kind of Dr. Burke to give her that platform. She's able to not only present her research, but she gets a standing ovation for it, even though there's only, like, three people there.
Props to the first guy to stand up is not Dr. Yeah. Burke or Sully, which I kind of like that detail. Like, there was a guy in there who actually appreciated. I don't know who that guy is, but shout out to that doctor.
Shout out to that guy. The big moment happens where they go off stage and Dr. Mike thanks William. I've never had someone believe in me this much. Well, except Sully. And then Dr. Burke's like, do you love him?
Proposal.
Has he asked for your hand? Because I love you and I am asking for your hand in marriage. We could be partners in work, partners in every sense of the word, partners in love. Do you love me? It's like very overwhelming.
He comes on strong.
Yeah.
I don't like this scene or the scene following, not just because of like the drama of it all, but why couldn't we let Dr. Mike have her moment?
Without being like...
as a doctor. Without making it, oh, now we've got to have conflict in our love story. The timing of it is... I just don't like
it. Yeah. Yeah, I wish it wasn't like as soon as she came off stage feeling proud of herself.
Exactly.
And why does a man have to give you a platform for you to like be able to like say what you need to say?
I mean... this isn't to say that we don't appreciate Dr. Burke giving her this opportunity, because obviously the society never would have agreed probably to let her even come speak. It was enough that they let her sit in on the meetings, right?
Right.
But he did give her that platform. It was really amazing. We believe she deserves it. Both men believe she deserves it. But to propose right after leaves this little feeling of like now she owes him something. And I don't think he doesn't present it that way at all. That's not what he says. Yeah. But I feel like in the timing, it's a little like we don't give her the chance to just sit in. Wow, that was amazing that I was able to bring something new and to be a teacher based on what I have learned from my experience. Like, we just didn't let her really have much of that moment before she's conflicted over, oh, Dr. Burke has proposed, but Sully's there.
Yeah, and Sully witnesses the whole thing, which is awkward. I also just wanted to mention that when Dr. Burke's like, do you love me? She's like, I thought it. I was sure of it. I wasn't sure of anything.
We don't know how Dr. Mike feels in that moment because we've spent too much time with all these other characters talking about how she feels instead of actually with her. I think as an audience, obviously, we don't think she's going to choose Dr. Burke, but I think I wanted to be more convinced of why. The kids don't mind him, but obviously Matthew doesn't.
But they haven't really interacted with him that much.
Yeah, exactly.
And like you said, Sully kind of confronts her outside. He's looking very sad. He pulls Dr. Mike aside and says, like, just tell me the truth. Are you going to marry him? And Dr. Mike is, like, very flippant, where she's like, it's none of your business. What? I'm not sure that was a good response. I think it's overwhelming. I give her some, like, slack. I think there's a lot happening in her brain.
I think both of them catch her off guard.
Yeah. Yeah.
She says, I don't know, to Dr. Burke, and he's like, take as much time as you need, which appreciate, right? It's got to be your decision. He's not like, oh,
it's now or never.
You need to choose me. You need to choose Boston, you know. But then she walks out, and Sully's like,
what are you going to do?
Yeah, and she's like, he just gave me time, and you're not giving me time, and you just want an answer.
Probably wouldn't have done any different, honestly.
I don't think she reacts correctly, but like you said, I don't know what else she could have said in that moment that would have made him happy other than, of course not, which she just said she's just not sure.
Yeah, I love it. Then he walks away and, like, pulls his suit, his suit jacket off, like, aggressively. I don't know why I love that scene. I always have loved that scene where he does that. He's like, why am I wearing these stupid clothes? for this girl who says it's none of my business who she marries.
Yeah.
Dr. Mike returns home to find that the children are sad and that Sully is gone.
And he's been gone for an hour, and I want to know what Dr. Mike was doing while she was not home for an hour.
Making out with her new non-official fiancé. No, but what does she do? She rushes to the train station, and she's looking on the cars for Sully. The music is building and it's building, and she finds him, and what does she say? What are you doing? You're just going to leave without saying goodbye, which I'm like, what did you think he was going to do? You just had a fight.
It's kind of childish because she's like, goodbye.
I think it's funny. I like it. And then we get to the root issue of why did you really come here? What's the real reason? He's like, because I care. And she's like, well, you sure didn't look like you care. And he's like, I came because I love you.
No, no, that's not what.
I mix it up.
He says, what do you care? And she says, I care.
Yeah.
Why does she get to question his motives for coming? But she got offended when he was questioning whether she was going to marry this other guy or not.
Because that's how love is.
But yes, he makes a declaration and we're all like, duh. But also, she's speechless and then she runs away. They are literally the same sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
He...
Yeah, emotions, talk about them. We don't do that.
Exactly.
But Sully looks shocked at himself even, like, after he says it. And I kind of like that because I think that's how you know it's sincere, because he wasn't expecting to, like, tell the truth about how he feels, yeah.
And then when she runs away... He almost looks like he's debating, should he go after her, or does he regret admitting it?
Well, because that is a big thing. That will changes everything for their relationship moving forward and what she does with that information. Which is probably a big reason people don't admit those things.
We knew it all along. His mom knew.
Her mom?
Her mom knew it all along. I'm pretty sure Dr. Burke probably knew it a little bit too, which is why he shot his shot when he did.
Yeah. This is true.
And then this next scene is the first time we get Dr. Mike actually sharing her feelings. And that is a part of this episode that is lacking. Is she sits down to talk to her mom and her mom's like, Dr. Burke's a great guy and he admires you and he could give you a life here that actually you would know. And it's a big change for also Mrs. Quinn, because reminder, when Dr. Mike first left Boston, her mom was like, you need to stop being a doctor because your dad's not alive anymore to feed into your fantasy. But now she's like, Dr. Burke could give you what you wanted. Boston could give your children a better life. And Dr. Mike's like, I don't love him. And we're like, oh, thank you for
nice to know.
Saying that out loud.
Wasn't sure.
Time period norms aside, what did you think about Mrs. Quinn's opinion on love and matches and her experience in marriage?
I think it's difficult for me to take out that piece that you just asked me to take out. Cultural norms, time period, all those things. Because I'm sure, like, if you would talk to, like, our grandmother, she would tell you that she loved our grandfather, but I think there were other factors in play than there are now.
Our grandmother who got married at 18.
Correct.
Yeah.
Our generation strives much more to have this, like, complete fulfillment in life. And I don't think people really in the time period before us, that was like a very unrealistic expectation to think that you could have full fulfillment in your working life, in your personal life, in your, do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that's a good thing to strive for. I think it's unrealistic as well. But I know many other cultures that is widely accepted and practiced even today, that not everything is about choosing who you love, that being arranged and having a good quote-unquote match can be much more successful. I think, like I said, we're guided by other factors as well, which have to do with our faith in when it comes to these things. But it doesn't surprise me to hear it from her. Not to mention this is, like you said, 19th century. And, you know, her mother's from an even different generation than Dr. Mike and Sully. And I think a lot of her motives are guided by the fact that she wants her daughter and her grandchildren to be around. So that's going to affect, you know, her opinion on the matter as well.
Yeah. To build off what you said, I think I remember, I haven't looked up recently, but at one point I had read, I don't know if it was in a historical text or it was something, that the divorce rate was actually lower in arranged marriages.
Yeah.
And I remember always thinking, well, that's probably because
it's not an option.
People who are in arranged marriages know from the onset that marriage is going to be work. Whereas I think, not everyone, but when you're in love with someone, you think, I'm always going to feel this way about this person. But in actuality, love and marriage takes effort to choose to be committed to each other and do life together, even when sometimes you don't like each other. Some people don't want to do that. You know, celebrity marriages, 9 times out of 10, their reason is irreconcilable differences or whatever. And I mean, obviously, I'm not married or divorced, but I've always thought, obviously, everyone's story is different. But this idea of, oh, we're getting divorced because we couldn't work it out, which a lot of times means we didn't want to. It was easier just to end it. And obviously, I'm generalizing here and stuff. But Dr. Mike says, well, didn't you love father? And Elizabeth kind of says, like, well, I had a limited option. I was 20 years old, and at a very significant point in my life, I didn't have many choices or something.
It kind of makes it seem like her choices were limited and she learned to love him, like, over time, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like there was some subtext.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like there was a backstory.
Oh, I'm sure.
That we didn't get to
right.
hear or something.
Right.
But what I love, the scene ends with, once Dr. Mike has said how she feels and what she wants, Elizabeth doesn't try to convince her anymore. She just says, will you come and visit again?
It's good when moms accept the choices that their children make, even if they don't agree with them. It's good. Well, I like it too, because it's like she knows the choice that Dr. Mike is going
to
make.
Yeah, like she's an adult. She has to make that decision. And at the end of the day, who you choose to marry, Mrs. Quinn's not the one getting married. At the end of the day, it's your decision, and you're the one who's going to live with that decision. Yeah. So trying to convince someone to go one way or another when you're not going to be going with them or doing it for them won't work.
The hardest part of this situation is Dr. Mike has to go tell William. And in a similar way to Mrs. Quinn, William, like, knows.
Yep.
As soon as Dr. Quinn walks in that clinic, he knows, and he doesn't need an explanation. And she says thank you. And it is kind of sad because he's pretty devastated, you can tell, but he knew. It's like somehow deep down he knew.
He doesn't try and convince her otherwise. He doesn't hold it against her. And yeah, it doesn't mean like we don't negate his feelings at all. But yeah, like he's like, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of period dramas where, you know, it's like, no, you have to fight for her.
Which I'm not opposed to those either. Like,
I think I appreciate, because this is Dr. Mike's story. That's what I was talking about with those dramas where you have the guys both trying to prove that they're the better choice and we as the audience have our reasons why or why not. That is not this story.
Yeah.
Either one of them would have been worthy of Dr. Mike, but at the end of the day, it's her choice.
So Dr. Mike tells Colleen. Colleen goes and tells the boys. And then we have this scene that actually made me tear up, because it's Brian with Elizabeth Quinn saying how he knows his grandma is sad because they're leaving. Brian asks his grandmother, I know you're sad, but why don't you come with us? And she says, because Boston's my home. And we see that Brian has been struggling all this time. He's the only one that hasn't really vocalized how he's felt about this whole thing, because he really misses Colorado. And it's sweet. He describes, I've dreamt about Colorado and my wolf and all these things. And in the same way, I will dream about Boston, and I'll dream about candy, and I will dream about my grandmother. And I literally teared up. They're like hugging, and I'm like, why am I like really missing my grandma right now? Like,
aww.
Yeah, it was, I think we've seen this development of Elizabeth Quinn for a character that's literally only been in a few episodes. We've seen a big development in her, and I think it's also a reminder that these kids have lost a lot in their lives, but they've also gained a lot too, and it is because of Dr. Mike and the choices she's made. And that's why I like think about, even if she had decided to say, like, how drastically it would change those kids' lives. And unfortunately, that's what happens when you have children, is you have to think about someone more than yourself. Like, you have to think of other people beyond just what you want. And so it was a sweet scene.
You know, it definitely is. I mean, Brian,
so freaking cute.
He's a special little boy.
Special boy.
So they go to say goodbye at the train station, and I know that I have given Matthew a really hard time this episode. I think that there must have been more to his storyline, because when they go to say goodbye to the grandmother at the train station, he gives Mrs. Quinn a hug, and he says, "I was wrong," and the grandma says, "About what?" And he says, "You." And then she hugs him. So I think there must have been.
I was trying to flash back to the visitor. He wasn't super nice to her during that episode.
Really? I don't remember that.
I think he wasn't super nice to her, and he didn't want to be looked after or whatever. I was thinking maybe it had to do with that. But yeah, there was.
But honestly, I don't feel like they interacted in these two episodes.
Well, they didn't show that, yeah.
So I think there must have been a Matthew storyline.
Or maybe.
That we missed out on.
Or maybe there wasn't, and they just were trying to like fill in.
They were trying to give him a more satisfying resolution.
Yeah.
It just actually made me more confused about Matthew.
Yeah, kind of fell flat. I agree. Our big ending scene, though. The stagecoach arrives back in good old Colorado.
It's probably been at least a week for their travels.
Yeah, it would have to take more than a week to get from the East Coast to Colorado. Yeah. I mean, I know trains are good. Yeah. You're right. They went to St. Louis first.
Well, it's not just, it's train to St. Louis and then maybe train to Denver and then a stagecoach to Colorado Springs.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
It's
yeah.
long. We know it's
been a hot minute, and Matthew and Ingrid...
Because Sully has his beard back.
Stop, don't skip to that yet.
Oh, sorry.
Matthew and Ingrid are glad to see each other. Dr. Mike is getting out, looking around.
Brian gives Mr. Bray a hug. It's cute.
And everybody's finding their person, and Dr. Mike is like... looking around, and she doesn't know where who she's looking for, and she goes to get her luggage, and Colleen actually kind of like grabs her shoulder and has her turn around, and sure enough, there's Sully walking towards them, and yeah, he's got his beard, he looks very mountain manish,
back in his outfit with Wolf sitting by his side,
back in mountain man form. Yeah, and then what happens?
And then she slow motion, da 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 da.
She does it. She like actually waits for a while. She's just like staring at him.
Actually, yeah. And he just stands there. I'm like, bro.
And then he gives like a little smile. And then she's like, okay, you don't hate my guts. Neither of us want to be like, ew, we don't like that we like it, but we like it. And then they run and they hug and they laugh and they kiss. And then she's like, I love you too. And it's kind of my favorite scene ever, as much as I'm like, ew, I hate myself.
For being the one who's not the romancy one, it's a good reunion. And it's a nice beat. I like that there's no explanation. It's just like, I'm here. I love you too. And it's good. It's a good ending.
Because he knew. Do you know what I mean? Like, part of me is like, they wouldn't have had to say anything. If I freaking came all the way back, like, cross country, turned down a marriage proposal and a really good opportunity to practice medicine. I'm just saying, like, he knew. Like, for her to come back, that was a decision that was made.
Yeah. He knew. But in his heart, right, yeah. You still yeah. are afraid.
She's like, I came back, but, like, if you just want to, like, stay friends, it's, like, fine.
But I think he knew she loved him. Before Dr. Burke proposed. And that's what makes it so hard. I think that's why he was trying so hard to understand her. Maybe in convincing Matthew of what she was going through, he was probably even reminding himself, right?
Right.
So yeah, I think there's like this moment where, okay, she's back. Does this mean what I think it should mean?
Right.
I think it does, but I'm not sure. And then, yeah, and then she runs to him and says, I love you too.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the two-parter.
Dun, 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 where the heart is.
Favorite scene, you're saying the ending.
Yeah, that's my favorite scene. Sorry, I'm super predictable, but... You know those scenes in the airport where they, like, confess their love? Or, like, in the rain and then they, like, run? I'm sorry, I'm just, yeah... I'm predictable. What can I say?
The second best scene probably would be the Brian and Grandma scene, probably.
Why are you asking me? It's your favorite scene.
Yeah, because I feel like there's a lot of angst in this episode. And so I don't...
Well, imagine if you were like, my favorite scene is when Dr. Burke proposes. Yeah, that would be a little...
No, no.
I'd be mad at you.
No, no. Okay, I was going to say maybe the conversation with Dr. Mike and her mom. Because Dr. Mike finally is able to articulate how she's feeling and what she wants.
Yeah. I like the scene on the train, too. As like dumb as it is, I like it because when push comes to shove, you have to decide how you feel, and you should tell people how you feel.
Just do it. Mm-hmm. Where are we ranking these episodes?
Do you want to know every time you say the word ranking?
You think a stankin' ranking? I know.
What's wrong with me?
Because I edit out when you say it every episode.
Really? I don't think I've ever. I think I've only said that once before.
No, that is not true.
Something about the way you. Okay, well, be quiet. Something about the way you say it reminds me of that. All right, let me look here.
Let's go for season 2 ranking first, and then we'll put it in overall.
I really like this episode, so I'm just going to say that.
Top of the list.
What do we have is number one right now is...
The incident.
Remind me what the incident's about.
That's Jake shooting Little Eagle. It's better. It is.
It's better than this episode.
No, this episode is better.
Oh, really? I'm kind of surprised at you because you're all about, like, moral and...
Yeah, but the incident, remember, my big thing about the incident is, like, Jake actually doesn't face up consequence. Yeah. Like, the moments that I wanted to see in the incident, we didn't actually see.
Yeah.
This one, I think, is better.
I mean, I'm with that. I'm for that.
We're looking them at as a pair, too.
We are.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think together the entire storyline. I still like the second half better than the first. The first is a little slow, but I understand for what reason. Okay, so it's number one, season 2.
Okay, now we need to look in our big list. So the incident is our number 7. Ooh. So number 6 is currently The Great American Medicine Show. I always think that one's just so good.
Yeah. The Visitor is above that, and The Visitor, I think there's some similar reasons we like that compared to this, just when it comes to character development and... family dynamics. I do agree that The Great American Medicine Show has a bit more, like, that we like this episode because it's has the romantic storyline that we've been, like, building up to,
but it's not the Dr. Quinn we know either, right?
And it's also, there's not, like, this huge moral.
Mm.
Happy Birthday is ranked as number 2. That was the last kiss we got.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just being dumb. The medicine part is, like, fine, but it's not, like, as good as some of the other ones. Like, Bad Water.
Yeah.
Operation. Like, yeah. That's, like, high quality medicine to me.
Well, and, like, The Visitor, we spend a lot of time getting to really explore the relationship Dr. Mike has with her mom.
Right.
This one keeps that, but it doesn't add much new to it.
Right. Yeah.
Where Elizabeth Quinn is at the end of The Visitor is where she pretty much is during this episode. So the new number 7?
I'm okay with that. Are people going to come for us? Are they going to be like, this is the best episode in the world?
No.
People do like this episode, though, for the same reasons we do.
It's a big turning point for their relationship, but it's not the ultimate relationship episode. I don't know. I only remember certain things. So we're going to go the new number 7, which puts it below The Great American Medicine Show and above The Incident.
Sweet. This was a fun episode to do.
Was this our first two-parter? It was.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 2 more in this season. So we'll have to look forward to doing those as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, we just usually talk about the title. How do you feel about the title of this episode?
Where the Heart Is. Where is the heart? Is it in Boston? Is it in Colorado? Home is where the heart is. And right now, her heart is with Sully. And that happens to be in Colorado.
Yeah. I think this is actually one of the first...
It's applicable.
...titles that I'm like...
Not mad at. Yeah.
It works. Where the heart is, and then home is where the heart is, because she goes back to Boston, which is home, but then... At the end, she chooses to be in Colorado, which is home.
Which, by the way, how appropriate.
Oh, you are literally wearing a sweatshirt with Colorado on it right now. Where did you buy that?
In Colorado.
Colorado Springs?
Not in Colorado Springs, no. In Aspen, actually.
I knew it. I knew it was Aspen. Excellent. Well, thanks for listening to this episode. This was a double episode, so... That should mean twice the lessons. Write in and tell us what you think. Sully, Dr. Mike, Matthew, Colleen, Brian, Mrs. Quinn, what lessons do you see the characters learning or not learning? You can shout out if you want to join that conversation about Dr. Burke as a character. We'd definitely be interested in hearing what you have to say and any thoughts on anything we discussed. And hey, write in your thoughts on our ranking, because we haven't had anyone comment on the ranking in a while, so I'm interested. Let us know what you think about Dr. Mike's feelings and decisions, or lack thereof, up until the end of this episode. And also, you know, Kelly won't mind if you want to write in and agree with her with all the moments that Sully was super handsome.
Yeah, I hate myself.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm excited to get back to Colorado Springs in our next episode. It was fun to get away, but I'm ready to be back.
Should you miss Jake and Hank?
Do I? I'm gonna say that I do up until I see them do something in the next episode, and then I'm gonna be like, just kidding, I hate these guys. But the next episode, 2.8, is called Best Friends. Do you remember anything about that one?
I don't. I'd have to read like the little synopsis.
Let me pull it up on, I actually have IMDb open. Oh no, it's not Best Friends. I wrote Best Friends. But according to the standards, 2.8 is Giving Thanks. There's a drought and no food for the town's Thanksgiving dinner. The townspeople fight over water.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you at our next episode.
Cha-ching. We'll see you, or we'll talk to you, or you'll hear us talk.
You'll hear us? Yeah. Peace.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Not a Lady, a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you might also enjoy visiting our website, www.notaladypodcast.weebly.com. There, you will find important resources and content related to Not a Lady Podcast. You can also write to us with lessons or comments on our Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook pages, or by sending an email to notaladypodcast@gmail.com. You can support our podcast by liking and sharing our content on social media. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss our next episode.